Friday, August 9th, I was up early, had a swim with Lyndon, about 20 laps. Tom Johnson and Jim Jones were in, and Marie Famer, too. And Marie, at last, Lyndon is achieving one of his ambitions. He's getting Marie taught to swim. And then Bernice Berg came and gave me a hairdo. And under the dryer, I finished the envelope of mail to sign and pictures to autograph that Ashton had sent down. Today was going to be a busy day with almost as much air traffic as Dulles. The first plane would be the Vice President and Muriel. I did not emerge from under the dryer in time to meet them. Lyndon did and took them riding, and I joined them at the Cedar House a little before 12. We came back to the main house and sat in the yard. I passed Bloody Mary's and draft beer, and then we went into lunch about 12:30. Hubert and Muriel and Bill Connell, his AA, and Marcia Shepherd, his pretty secretary, and Doris Kearns and Jim Jones and Tom Johnson and Marie, and Matilda Krim, who had arrived last night and was our house guest. Hubert was his ebullient, happy self. He looked fit and healthy once again after his siege, and so did Muriel. Her clothes are darling now. She told me about her plans. She will travel mostly with Hubert. Later, when she goes off by herself, she will try in each town to follow a pattern of either a lunch or a reception with Democratic women, a talk on the subject that she knows best to some appropriate group, child health, with a special emphasis on retarded children, and a press meeting, which she is loath to call a press conference. We are somewhat alike, she and I. Neither of us think we have anything big enough to call a press conference for. But a discussion, now that's different. I made one forthright request of Hubert, laughingly saying that whoever was the next president of the United States, I had one favor I wanted to ask, and now is my chance to ask him. He wound up in that big house. Would he please keep Blanco? Blanco is a patrician. The White House lawn is the perfect setting for him. At the ranch, he's scared of the cattle. He used to be scared of the peacocks, of everything that's strange. And he beats a retreat for the house, the president's room, and finally, under the president's bed. We discussed with happy frankness our opinions of the McGoverns and Senator McCarthy, Hubert and Muriel and their party, left about 3 o'clock. In a flurry of arrivals, earlier at a quieter time, I had phoned Roy White and asked if he could come out. He wanted to bring Max Brooks with them, and they arrived as a threesome, actually, with another member of the firm, just as I was taking Muriel and Hubert to the airport. And then there was a flurry of arrivals. The Washington shuttle bringing Secretary Weaver and Joe Califano and Mrs. Middleton and their 4 children, and at the same time, and I'm not sure whether they came in on a separate plane or not, though I think they did, Edgar Kaiser and his son and assistant. We got the message that Senator Eastland's plane was circling and about to land. Instinctively, I thought that Senator Eastland and Secretary Weaver wouldn't be exactly a cozy little company, so perhaps I could be useful by meeting Senator Eastland and entertaining them and driving around the place while Lyndon conducted his business with the secretary and the Kaiser group. But first, I quickly drove Mrs. Middleton and the 4 children down to the aide's office, asked for a car to take them into town, cokes or refreshments or anything, no, and then back just in time to be at the foot of the ramp as the senator descended. He was accompanied by 2 friends, D.A. Biglane and W.O. Sheridan, and I relaxed happily into the accents of the Deep South. I made apologies for Lyndon, asked him to get in with me, and let's see something of the place while he's attending to some business, and then we join him. So we drove down by the graveyard, no unfamiliar sight for Mississippians, and the house where Lyndon was born, and around looking at the cattle, I proudly displayed the coastal Bermuda. Yes, they had coastal Bermuda in Mississippi. Plenty of it. This, they thought, was mighty fine. They were exceedingly complimentary of our registered cattle. Senator Eastland was determined to talk politics. He said, "You know your husband's going to be nominated, don't you?" I said, "No, sir, not at all. There's not going to be any movement of that sort. That is, not with any force behind it. And if he were, he wouldn't accept." He seemed somehow taken aback, a little disbelieving, as though I had hoped it would happen that way, but relatively unshaken in his conviction. "You know, Hubert can't make it. He's not catching on." As little as they see eye to eye, as much as lies between them, he would rather see Lyndon nominated than anybody now before the Democratic Party.
And he did not seem enthusiastic for George Wallace, whom he considered quite strong.
I was just about to exhaust the interests of the place and concerned about when I could take my guests home.
Finally, I drove back to the main house and with considerable relief saw Lyndon's convertible just going around the barn, conveying Secretary Weaver and Joe Califano and the Kaisers to the plane. It was only later that I learned the tremendously exciting nature of their visit. The seeds go back to our visit to Karachi in Pakistan in 62, or was it 61, and a housing development that we saw there. The whole little city in the process of being built, actually, was planned and designed by Doxiadis, the Greek architect, and Lyndon had been ecstatic with it then and had never forgotten it since, and had talked to dozens of housing people, architects, everybody through the framework of government. Finally, he was determined in his last few months to get something like this produced in our country. That is, small housing units, not more than, say, 500 square feet, with minimum plumbing facilities that could be sold for $5,000 per house. And now, at last, he has just challenged Kaiser to produce a prototype, and they're going to do it in Austin, Texas, and before Lyndon is out of office. About 10 different contractors are going to produce one each and see what's the lowest they can come out on it. That is, in what sort of material, hollow tile, or brick, or wood. It is an exciting prospect, and who knows, maybe a step up in putting home ownership within the reach of very poor people. So in a moment, Lyndon was back, greeting the senator and his friends warmly. There was also Ernest Darneel in the group with his two sons, and I wasn't sure whether they had come in a separate plane. So confusing is this day. So leaving Senator Eastland and party with Lyndon, I went back in to join Max and Roy, only an hour late. We worked in the yellow sitting room, my very favorite room in the whole house, on the big problem of the park across the river. It seems their firm has been asked by Will Edward Odom to make proposals for the extended budget. My only insistence was that they work with the National Park Service, which was already working on an overall plan for the park. And then we went on to the small problems of my dressing room and Helen and Gertrude's rooms and baths. This complex is anything but static. There's always something new going on. Close to six, I said goodbye to Max and party and went to join Lyndon and the senator at the Reagan Ranch. They were riding around in the convertible with the top down, skillfully interweaving farming and politics in the conversation. I think Lyndon was trying to blunt Eastland's hostility to Fortas, if not to win him over, and that may not be possible. He is a very determined man, a positive one, at least to draw off any venom he may have, to explain Fortas as we know him. It was an interesting hour. The raillery reminiscences, play of their two personalities, rather like two boxers dancing around the ring, exchanging blows, but good-natured. Meanwhile, we were all having a little refreshment, although I, because of this ailment, which is beginning to be terribly boring, a very unexciting refreshment, Mr. Big Lane and Mr. Sheridan were characters. I felt the understanding of them that is produced by having been born and raised in very much the same region. But I shiver to think what an Eastern writer would have done with them, with their words, their political and social views, their wonderful accent. Somewhat to my surprise, they were ardent LBJ supporters, and for all the right reasons, I thought, they saw in him just the same sort of champion of the poor folks that I do. The practical, earthy, determined, sometimes skeptical, always hopeful, believer that you can do something about man and his troubles. And to a man, all three of them were insisting that Lyndon was the only man for the Democratic Party in this coming election. How surprising this is, coming from three staunch Mississippians. Finally, after we had seen every cow and bull on the place, and almost every blade of grass, and that goes for both sides of the Scharnhorst, and the dance in Martin as well, and even the auction barn, to which Lyndon had taken them as a last show of what was happening in this country, we finally returned from the auction barn by helicopter just at sunset promising Senator Eastland that he would be back with his granddaughter. His 6-year-old granddaughter had laced all of his conversation all afternoon. And at long last, we had him back at the plane with goodbyes just before dark came. The Krims were there at the house, and Tom Johnson and Doris Kearns, Jim Jones and Marie. We all sat down for dinner. Meals, unhappily, mean very little to me these days, because there's nothing fit to eat that I'm eating. And as for poor dear Lyndon, he had put himself at once, on returning from the hospital on Thursday, on the liquid diet in preparation for the Monday test, although he didn't have to begin it until Saturday morning. All in all, for two people that are supposed to be halfway sick, it had been a very full, very busy, exciting day.